Perhaps it is our imperfections that make us so perfect for one another. Douglas McGrath. Bending Not Breaking. The Live Action Episodes. Episode 1. Aang. And welcome back to another season of Bending Not Breaking.
That's right. What?
And guess whose voice you hear?
You hear my voice.
That's right. We got him back, folks.
Just barely.
Just barely. Just for these episodes, we're really excited to.
The sign-on bonus had to be.
Yeah. Huge. It was worth it. You know, it was worth it.
Sure.
We're here. We're happening. It's great.
They finally did it. They released live action episodes.
Yeah. And they're not the movie, you know?
It's not the movie.
Yeah.
It's not the show. Well, it is a show.
It is a show. It literally is a show.
But it's probably a good time. We are excited to be back.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about what we can learn from Avatar The Last Airbender and all of its offshoots.
That's right.
And so it is probably important to lift up, like, the point is to not necessarily have opinions on the show. Like, clearly we created this podcast because we loved the content.
Correct.
And yeah. That doesn't mean that we're here to form opinions about the content. It's just about what are the learning moments that we can pull out of it.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, of course, we have opinions, right?
Sure.
But the whole point of doing this as a practice is learning how to put those opinions aside to be able to learn and grow from the material, which theoretically is a pretty good practice to be able to do in our daily lives, being able to, even though we are, you know, may or may not have positive or slightly less positive associations with something, if we can put those associations aside and really lean into the content, then theoretically we can still learn something, and that is what we're aiming for.
That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Like right now I'm in a book club and we're reading a book in that book club.
We are reading a book in the
book
club.
And it's not for me. That's what I'm learning. But I can still learn things from it.
Yeah, I'm about a third of the way through.
That's how far I am.
And
it's like the world's most metaphorical history textbook.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
And that is not my style of narrative.
We're getting there, though. We'll make it through.
Audiobook on 2.0 and then reading Spark Notes is the only way I'll finish it by the
classic.
End of the month.
Anyway, that is
it's a whole separate
fun
thing.
Little digression.
Yeah.
But we're here and we're talking about Nahtla. As it is affectionately known.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender.
Exactly, Nahtla, yeah.
Not Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting, but no. It is really neat that we get to talk about Netflix's adaptation. Speaking of adaptation, we are talking about adaptation
today.
That's our lens for
today.
Episode one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A change, or the process of change by which an organism or species becomes better suited to its environment.
Better suited to its environment.
Which I don't, you know,
interesting.
You might have opinions on whether or not it accomplished that, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
Correct. Well, it's also thinking about adaptation. There's this, you can adapt, but you can also be maladaptive, right? So you are adapting and transforming either way. I think it's subjective as to whether it is a positive association or a negative association.
Mm-hmm.
And that means there all that judgment is up for each individual person to make, not for any you know, association to come out with, like, this is the way.
Yeah.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, that's generally the language colloquially that people use also to describe any sort of, like, it's a movie adaptation of a book, right?
Yeah. And the movies are always better.
Yeah, we've learned that.
Always.
Yeah, every time.
History would dictate.
There are some times where that is true.
There are some times where the movie is better than the book.
Yeah.
Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's on my shelf. I'm selling all my movies. If you want to purchase any of my DVDs,
hit us up on Patreon.
I have a lot. Anyway, But well, yeah, that's what they're called. They're called adaptations.
Yeah. Which, and I think that's an important thing to realize for any form of change is that, like, yeah, there are ways that it can be better and there are ways that it can be worse and there are ways that it can net zero impact. But ultimately, it's, again, what are you learning from that process? Why is that change happening? There's certain things that we are going to have a real fun time talking about in this episode.
And I think what's important is there's a difference between an adaptation and a replica, right? Like, it is intentionally not the same exact thing. And I think that matters, where, like, the intention is that it will not be the exact same. There are lots of nods, there are lots of things that are done, but considering, you know, this is 20 years later, there are changes that were made and changes that were addressed in the creative process, even for the audience to be prepared for.
Yeah. Changes.
Turn and fight. Point. I knew, like, in my head, I knew that was going to happen, but yep. I still did it.
All right. Well, before we get into that, as we have always done, it's time for a recap. And Ben, because the episodes are three times as long,
I get you've got to three cover, times the amount.
You've got to cover three times the amount of content in a 30-second recap.
I don't get a minute and a half?
You do not get a minute and a half.
This is absurd.
No one cares. On your mark, get set, go.
Okay, Fire Nation traps Earthbenders. They're not the real targets. Sozin's actually going for the Air Nation. Preps for the Comet Festival. Air Council is like, Aang must be the Avatar. Must know. Gyatso's like, oh my god, you're the Avatar. And then they light people on fire, and Sozin kills Gyatso. And then it's, like, really kind of burny. And then, you know, Aang, Iceberg, Katara, Sokka, Zuko, emo artist, draws pillar of light, and then Sokka fights Zuko, and then there's Angsty, and then there's Aang captured, and then they fly away to the air temple, and then Aang gets sad, and then there's the Avatar state, and then, like, that's three, really it. I two, just, like, you have one. To skip things.
So good.
Yeah.
The best you've ever done.
I mean, yeah. Like, when you have to skip half the episode, it's pretty good.
Hey, well, anyway. Now you know for future episodes.
Now you know. Skip everything.
Just because the episodes really are well. Three times as long, that also means our episodes will be three times as long.
Also
so
true.
Get ready for a three-hour podcast. Listen on time and a half.
Yeah. I recommend that for some things. I like the book that I'm currently reading.
Like a book that I'm currently reading.
Okay.
Stick around to the end. Maybe we'll tell you the title.
Yeah. Can you guess from the hints we drop throughout? What is a moment of adaptation in episode one of Nattwa that you noticed?
Yeah. One of the first ones, the biggest ones that pops up to me is when Katara is hiding her waterbending.
Mm.
So in really getting around the idea of having to hide either your authentic self or your true self and adapt to the environment you're in, but for safety reasons. And probably not the way that you would want to, like, adapt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a moment for me that popped up that I was just like, I think there's a lot of times in more recently through conversations where I recognize that a lot of leadership tactics, a lot of accountability tactics, a lot of things that you get taught by in therapy or over the past 20 years works really well in a silo, and sometimes it gets shattered in the moment of, what if it is not emotionally or physically safe for me to behave that way?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you got to hold somebody accountable. You should just have that conversation with them.
Just be yourself.
Right.
And everything will be better if you just lean into who you are.
And sometimes I think it ignores the idea that sometimes it's literally not safe to do that.
Yeah.
And from my position of being cishet, straight, white male, like, rarely am I the one who is in that position. So it's very easy for me to say,
just be yourself.
Just be yourself. Oh, Katara, you should just be the best bender you can be. Which, there's probably a space where that can be true.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my place to dictate that. And
yeah.
It's also, you know, safety is a big part of that. And so seeing Sokka really react in a way of, like, you can't do this because the last person who did this is dead is a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing about this too is a lot of the things that caught my eye when it came to adaptation and watching this episode were surrounded based off of fear and safety, right? A lot of the things that the people in this episode are dealing with are those things. Like Sokka, if even is has a similar route where the way he has adapted to be the quote leader of the tribe has been to put these children on watches and have like, and you know, they're older than they are in the original, but like there are still some people that are his age, so in their teens all the way down to what looks to be 5 and 6 years old, who are manning shifts watching the village when a Fire Nation, according to I forget who said it, but hasn't been to the village in years. Like this is a practice that has been a result of years and years ago, the last time that a Fire Nation raid occurred, and they're still being vigilant. And so this adaptation is a long-lasting thing. And I think that's the thing that when I'm working with clients and thinking about in therapy is sometimes we can realize that a skill that we have developed that has kept us safe is really important to have and to know, but it's also really important to have some awareness around when that skill is no longer useful. Or not, no longer necessary, or no longer needed.
Or when you're using it at all.
And right? Knowing like, that you're doing it yep. still, right? And having the awareness that it's still happening. But yeah, I mean, for Katara, it's not just a matter of adapting to like the fear of a Fire Nation raid. It's the fear of the judgment of everyone in the village too, right? Like the people who are like, if you do this, then you're putting us all in danger. And there's a real like pull for her to want to be good at this because it connects it to her mom, it connects her to her culture and village, but also it puts her in danger. And so this is really kind of a tough position to be in. I get why she's doing this alone.
And then it turns into like, you see the kids then act in a way that they've adapted to that I would argue puts them in further danger.
Yeah.
Right? Like throwing rocks was caught them off guard. Like
it was,
caught the Fire Nation
it was
off guard.
Funny. I laughed.
But also, had Aang not been there,
yeah,
whole village would have been burnt to the ground because of it. So
yep.
It's so interesting because then it's also like this thing of like when is safety versus discomfort versus worth it versus not worth it, right? Like
yeah.
Where's the line? It's a really interesting dynamic for us to each have to choose between as we navigate life, right?
Well, yeah, and it's just a tough call. And I think that that's a really interesting scene to dive into in terms of adaptation too, because there's a lot of adapting in that scene around, you know, Zuko comes into this, you know, into Wolf Cove and is saying, listen, I'm trying to be nice here. I don't want to burn y'all stuff down. I just want you to give me the Avatar. He doesn't belong here anyway. Sokka's like, great.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Like,
logic's there.
Let's hand him over. And one of the things that happens so fast is Sokka hears Katara, listens to her, and he adapts his strategy. And he adapts his strategy based off of Katara's asking and feedback. And he goes in, grabs his, you know, wolf club thing, bone club, and challenges Zuko to a one-on-one instead, right? Like his intention completely 180'd from just that one interaction. And that kind of ability to be flexible in the moment and ability to change your mind like that is huge. I think that's massive.
Yeah, when we talk about adapting, I think that was one of the questions that popped up for me is when he's like, all right, let's go get him. Let's go save the world, right? It's this moment of he wasn't there an hour beforehand.
Yeah.
And so how do we have such a willingness to adapt and change?
Mm.
Especially in times where sometimes it's like, all right, where do you stand your ground when
yeah.
you admit that maybe you were wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And what a hard time to navigate that as individuals for us of like, when is it worth standing our ground because it's right?
Yeah.
When is it worth admitting that we were wrong because it's the right thing to do?
Yeah.
And that is such a tough marker to identify in the moment.
Well, and I think if you ask a bunch of ethicists around the best thing for Sokka to have done in that moment, there would be a lot of people that would argue about what he should have done. A lot of people would argue that he should have turned Aang over for the good of the village. One person for the good of the many, right? Theoretically. Or are you thinking long, 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 long term of, no, the Avatar supersedes that of that many people, and we need to do all of our best to protect this one person, right? There's a lot of ethical questions, and the fact that what we learn in this moment is that Sokka's compass is geared and really values Katara's input. And this isn't the only time we see that happen, right? And there's something about their relationship that is really beautiful, that to have someone in your ear that can change your mind like that, from something where you're gung-ho set one way, and then you listen to someone whose opinion you truly value, shift your perspective. That's, I don't know that I can think of many people that would be able to shift my perspective that quickly.
No. Not right? Without me pondering for 4 hours.
Really taking time right? to like, think about it, right?
And that's a tough thing. And you know what it is? It's balance, right? You've got to be able to balance between the two of those things. It's almost like that's the point of this entire show.
Balance.
Since the beginning.
Yeah. But thinking, again, leaning into this moment, like, Aang's also adapting, right? So when we have Sokka, who is changing his mind left and right, challenging Zuko, Aang says it. No one's ever chose to fight for me. And Aang steps in and calls Sokka brave. And talk about that being a pivotal moment for Sokka.
Yeah,
I bet that's probably one of the statements that kept Sokka going, like, and made him want to go save Aang after that.
When you feel seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. That's huge. Big, big moment.
That was a big moment. What about more adaptative moments for you?
Yeah. I want to talk about Gran-Gran for a minute.
Let's talk about Gran-Gran.
One of the things that I noticed on this watch was it felt to me like Gran-Gran was adapting more quickly to seeing an airbender than anyone else was. Was first to recognize this is an airbender, was first to recognize that, oh, this is the Avatar, was first to, like, really quick to leaning into the cultural lore of the town and to the rich history that she seems to have the most knowledge about. And so my question was, what helps us adapt more quickly? And it seems to me my answer, and I'm curious about your response, but it seems to me the answer is when things make more sense to you, when you have more context, you're able to adapt more quickly. Does that seem right, or is there more to it?
I think it's a yes and. I agree. I think the more experience you have, the more knowledge you have, the more likely you're going to be able to say, oh, this is what this is, right? If you've never heard of a plane before or flight, your mind is going to be blown the first time you go to an airport.
Yeah, that's not possible.
Right?
Yeah.
If you know about it, you're like, no, this is, and you may know the science behind it. And so it becomes very easy to kind of understand, wrap your head around. So I think that there's certainly a part of that. And we see a little bit of that next episode, right? With Suki kind of being like, I haven't seen the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think there's definitely a moment of that context of, she's got this knowledge. She has the understanding of what airbender tattoos are. She knows, oh, the last time that you were alive or were conscious was during the comet.
100 years ago.
I know
ago.
What happened at the Southern Air Temple when the comet got hit. So,
and then
right,
she had a clue. He talked about the Great Comet Festival.
Right.
Right? And so that was her clue to realize. And I thought that was a really cool thing, is to the idea that all of the nations would celebrate the coming of this comet is really kind of neat.
But I think that it's the more knowledge you have, the more experience you have of something, the easier it's going to be to kind of pick up, I think. We're watching a lot of Survivor right now.
Big fan.
And
some people don't adapt.
Some people don't. But it also, I think, to your point, they come in without a certain level of a knowledge base. The puzzles on Survivor have been the same for the last, like, 15 years for the most part.
Well, and this is the second, like, season where someone has built replicas of those same puzzles and come on Survivor and then crushed said puzzles.
Because they know what to kind of expect, right? And so to watch someone go up there and kind of – we always say, if anyone goes on Survivor and you don't know how to start a friction fire –
you're losing.
Like,
what are you doing?
What have you been doing? Like, the moment I apply, you should learn
the
that
knowledge.
The first
thing I'm going to learn is start eating rice only.
And so I think there's so much, you're just able to better navigate things around you the more knowledge you have and the more practice you have. And that doesn't mean that you have to sit and do nothing but like read books. But it is about go gain experience, go be in community with people, go learn about others, which is not an easy ask for everyone.
Well, the problem too is we can flip the script here and also say that sometimes the demographic that adapts least well are people with a lot of experience, are people who have been doing it the same way their whole lives, and the change is like, icky. People don't like change. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, right?
Yeah.
You like that?
The Carolina really came out of you.
The Carolina real came out of me, yeah. But that's what I'm saying, though. Like, the idea that some people who have experience are unadaptive, don't adapt well.
And I think the question there is, do you have experience in change? Not just not experience just in the expertise that you have in this area, but have you promoted change, right? So
yeah.
There's something to be said about, you know, you cook a lot of pizzas, right? Homemade doughs and things like that.
Big
if
fan.
You were to just master the one dough that you've ever done, mm-hmm. and you're like, it's good enough and it's delicious and I like it, and I'm really good at making it, you're not gonna wanna necessarily change things up, versus the person who says, I wanna now learn a different technique to making pizza dough. Is it good? Nope, yeah. Didn't work out that time. Okay, I won't do that version again, but I'll still try a new version. And so I think that sometimes it's not just experience in a one area. It's are you willing to experience change and practice that muscle, the muscle of change, right?
I think that's such a good point, though, because like it's one thing to be able to do something really, really well, but to be able to practice change versus practice a certain skill that requires change, is those are two different things. I think that's really important to highlight. Like, the idea of transformation, growth, development, learning, and expansion, all of that is a form of change. And if you're able to do those things in a wide variety of areas, you're gonna become more humble, right? I would think. And naturally, becoming more humble is gonna make it so that when something comes along, you're gonna question whether your way is the best way, right?
And I think for Gran, there's probably a semblance of, I know and heard stories about what life was like prior to this. I know that life can work and be different than what it currently is. And that might be the important knowledge base of the willingness to accept new things.
Mm.
It's just the understanding that, like, I've seen me better. The idea that, you know, hope is a driving force in these episodes. And so it's easier to hope and believe in hope when you have experienced the joy that comes from that.
Well, and then there's this Iroh quote that says, like, hope's not always a good thing.
Which, I mean, you know, that's another part of when you're diminishing and adapting.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it, right? Is Zuko and Iroh adapting because the pain after hope feels so bad, mm-hmm. that you don't hope anymore?
And that's what it felt like,
but
right?
But we've had conversations where you can't diminish that without diminishing the joy you're going to experience,
yes.
when the good stuff happens.
Yeah.
You can't constantly kind of pad yourself for the shoe to drop, and then when it doesn't, you're not going to experience that joy the same way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the differences in this episode, or this kind of iteration of Zuko, feels like it's a less angry Zuko.
Oh, he's super emo instead.
It's still, yes.
Emo artist Zuko.
Still has
diary writing.
Still has his feels, but what I've seen so far, it's not typically anger that gets to those feels. It's just this, like, this, it is, I just want to be back. Like, I want to get, in versus where the first one was like, no, I'm mad that I got kicked out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be back. And I'm mad at other people for being so dumb to not allow me, like, to screw it up for me.
Yeah.
It's just a different Zuko, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, it's just an interesting take to that. I think one of the things that we see Zuko's inflexibility or lack of adaptation to with his just driving force of, like, this is the Avatar, then this is the Avatar, then this is the Avatar, right? But this time he's right. And Iroh gives him this one liner that says, hope's not always a good thing. And because he thinks this is going to be another failure where mm-hmm. this wasn't the Avatar again, and you're getting your hopes up and you're going to get your hopes dashed. But I also like the double play there where he's also saying you're kind of hoping for the wrong thing here. Like he is pretty explicit with Zuko by saying like your dad sent you on a trip that he didn't think you could do.
Well, is it possible? And Zuko's right? like, no, that's not possible. And Nairo's like, is it? Yeah. Isn't it a little possible?
Yeah, and so it's just interesting to...
Your dad's like, not the nicest guy.
He's and that's a good question to ask, I guess, is like when you have more perspective than someone you're responsible for, right? Someone you love and care about even. Maybe you're not even responsible for them, but you're just in relationship with this other person. And you see that they are, you know, in a really problematic place. And I would argue that this is the relationship right now with Iroh and Zuko, where Iroh sees that Zuko is thirsting for the crown, thirsting for the glory, thirsting for you know, quote, his father's affection, if you will. And, you know, Iroh sees how, like, problematic that is and is like, dude, maybe you should be thinking about other things. And what do you do? Like, is this the best way is to walk and accompany someone on that journey, even though you know they're going down the wrong path? Or is there a better way? And I don't have a good answer for you.
No. No. Another moment that peaks up for me is Aang going into the Avatar state after seeing Monkey Atso.
Ooh.
And then course correcting himself.
Yeah.
Which, like, what a talent to be able to do that.
We see just emotional the intensity.
In the processing, right? Like, it's a very quick, like, all the things, all his past learnings kind of going through his head. And he just, like, calms.
Yeah.
I was doing this for a reason.
Yeah.
And, like, I wish that I was able to, like,
process that.
so fast.
Yeah.
Which, what a skill that takes to be able to do that. But that's adapting, right? That's the...
Yeah,
sometimes it's not external factors that force you to adapt. It's the internal ones of, like, how do I want to engage with the world around me? And that's what's forcing the change.
Well, it's also important, I think, to acknowledge the external thing that happened, which was, you know, Katara is yelling, Aang, Aang, Aang. And then the voice shifts to Gyatso's, where it's like, Aang. And he's talking to him, and he's able to, like, I think oftentimes we fail to make the connections between the external stimulus and the internal process. And I think that's something that is really important to recognize, because when you can recognize what the stimulus is, it gives you a lot more capacity to grapple with the processing. Mm. And so, yeah, I think he did a, like, for a 12-year-old, an exceptional job, despite tearing down this building that he's in, that's all been decrepit anyway, but and putting Sokka and Katara in danger. But, like, overall, this is a really beautiful moment where he's able to just lean into the pain that he's experiencing at this loss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, huge.
One of my favorite moments in the animated show as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what a moment of adaptability.
We love adaptability.
We do. What other moments for you?
One of the things that I'm thinking about in this episode is just the kind of air nomads and the air nation, generally speaking, in the beginning. And the way that they're adapting to the Fire Nation taking a full force, right? And they have this meeting, and it's this, you know, the air council in this really dark, airy room. Where they're all, you know, having this lovely conversation, and Gyatso is offering, like, hey, here's the deal. This kid's emotion landscape, his age, all of these things are a factor here. And they're like, we don't have a choice. We are sending him to master these disciplines, X, Y, and Z. And so the way that the, you know, leadership of the Air Nation is responding to global war is through the Avatar. And through this 12-year-old and saying that we need to send him away to begin his learning more intently. am really curious what the conversations look like outside of that in terms of preparation. And we just don't know what they are.
But, like, are all the eggs in the Avatar basket?
Yeah, is that the question? Like, that's the kind of the question, right? Like, is that the only thing they're doing in terms of, because they're pacifists, right? Is this the only thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious.
Yeah. I don't know. Are we assuming that the, like, whole combustionable flight from Fire Nation folks is strictly because of the comet?
I would think so. Yeah.
Because I feel like it's a pretty intense power to have full time.
Yeah, I would think so. That's my thought.
It's the one time they could actually get up onto...
They'd have to be super empowered by some sort of external force, I would think, to be able to do that. But maybe I'm wrong.
Because I don't know what the plans are for that in terms of fighting that. Yeah, it's really interesting. One of the things that this iteration of the story has brought up for me is the idea that Aang ran away in the original cartoon.
Yeah.
Versus now it's this idea of, like, I need to go process things. Mm-hmm. And there's an argument that comes up for sure that's like, does that take away from the emotional journey he needs to go on once he reemerges?
Mm-hmm.
Because is that the difference between the blame and the guilt
and
not having the blame and the guilt? Which, maybe, I don't know. I'd say...
I bet he's still pretty guilty.
But the argument that I am now thinking of is like, is it irrelevant because were they not just going to send him to a water tribe anyways?
Yeah.
Right?
If give it a week and he would have been sent away anyway.
And he wouldn't have been able to do anything in that moment.
Yeah.
Even as a 12-year-old, if he were there. So the idea of running away is still one that, like, as a kid, you can't rationalize yourself out of. Because if I'm 12, I'm probably still going to be like, it's all my fault. In the same way that any time a traumatic event takes place between, like, me and my family as a 12-year-old, do I think it's, what did I do wrong, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm starting to just think in general for Aang, it's like, yeah, it's not your fault
that, he would have had
people,
a
got, that
major...
people got genocided,
yeah.
right?
He would have had a major thing to adapt to regardless of the reason. And we see that. Like, he's still having a time adapting, right? This is still something that he has to process and learn and change and figure out.
And so I think that's one of those things, too, is recognizing that it's not your fault. Just like it's not Korra's fault that there's a lost connection between avatars after being abused.
Yeah.
Right.
Wild that people make that accusation.
I'm going to say that if you think it's Korra's fault, then you're also blaming Aang for the genocide of his people.
Accurate.
And both of those things are dumb.
Yeah. Agreed. So, I'm willing to stand on that. Yeah.
So that is now my point to give Korra a little love.
Yeah. We love Korra. I do love Korra.
But that is one of the things that the change itself in this adaptation, I think, raised the question for me, like, was it never Aang's fault, right?
Yeah.
Not that we didn't know that in the beginning, but it's just one of those things of, it was never his fault. But you hear Sokka say that, like, he ran away,
you coward. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He ran away, which I think is...
Which makes it so that Aang still has to process that, even though he didn't.
Did I run away?
Yeah, right?
Could I have done anything to stop the mass genocide of my people?
Yeah. Yeah. Wild. Ooh, man. Well, and again, like, just the mention of Sokka reminded me of, like, just the second time that he listens to Katara, right? Where I'm totally not going to get on Appa. I'm not going to get on And he's, you know, then cackling and riding away on Appa. And then it's just interesting how much influence it seems that Katara has over Sokka in this version.
It does. That alone makes me think, there was a time when I was a kid where I did not want to ride roller coasters. Mm-hmm. And I was like, absolutely not. You're not putting me on my first big roller coaster. And then I rode a roller coaster.
Yep.
And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But then I was only wanting to ride that roller coaster because I knew it was safe. And so the time we went to the next roller coaster, I was like, nope, survived one. I'm not taking my chances again. I clearly defied God the first time.
Learning to adapt.
But there is, sometimes it really is just that experience of, like, take the leap. Right,
yeah.
Like, just do it, and that alone is the change necessary for that adaptation to take place.
Yeah. Hear, hear. Oh, man. I mean, we've, like, we've gotten through a lot of these things. What are we missing? What haven't we talked about?
You know, I feel really good about that. I like that we get a little more time with the air nomads. I like that.
I do like that. Yeah.
The intro is an interesting one of, here's a change you're doing that you think is for the betterment, right? I'm going to take this notice and steal it from the Fire Nation and give it to my comrade. And
yeah.
He's going to run to the Earth Kingdom. And this is a change we're doing and participating in, and a risk that we're taking, all to find out like,
I walked into that one.
That was the point. And I think that there's, what that kind of lifts up for me is like, yeah, that was a failure, but that doesn't mean that wasn't the right move to make.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll make changes and it won't work, and that's okay. And you can change, you can still keep changing. You can still keep trying change.
I think also what we see in this version is a very more fleshed out version of Sozin that we don't get in the original. Like, we get Sozin's younger years in the original, and we see that he was just a normal guy, and he had a different kind of life that led him to experience a certain kind of way, and then Roku dies and the path is open and the comet comes and you're like, okay, we're gonna take advantage of this. And that's kind of like the tone of the original, whereas this one is like, no, we're planning this out to a T. And I'm going to be ruthless, and I'm also going to burn this captive alive right in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very different kind of ruthlessness of like, yeah, we're not going to just target one person. We're going to target the entire nation. And, you know, it's one thing where it's kind of like when it's hinted at, you kind of get away from the brutality. But there's also a part of me that's like, I think you kind of have to be that ruthless in order to take out an entire nation. But it's also another thing that I'm thinking about of like, it's a different kind of story when Sozin is front and center in the battlefield versus a commander behind enemy lines or behind, you know, friendly lines that's like telling people to go do things and you never actually have to see what's going on. We get to see like a very ruthless Sozin, and I think there's a lot more nuance to Sozin in the original that I like. It's an interesting change that I'm not sure how I feel about, but it's also one of those things where it's like wild to me to think about, like, this is the level of brutality that is required in order to commit a genocide like this. And I think it's more insidious than that, that you don't have to be this brutal.
Yeah, I it's really, I think it depends on the story you're telling, right?
Yeah.
In terms of what are you wanting to picture. If the point is we want to be brutal, then, like, I don't know. If the point is, like, we want people to rumble with how brutal this was, then, like, that decision makes kind of sense to me. I multiple outlets, and one of the things I think works so good about the show Avatar in itself is this, there's so many people participating in this oppression just by being present.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of arguments that we even had about, like, how do people in the Fire Nation stand up for that, knowing that, like, death, family death is all on the line when you stand up for those things. But it really is, when oppression is taking place, it's really easy to sit and do nothing.
And that kind of gets to the question of, and so, like, that you raised earlier, right? When do you stand your ground and, you know, knowing that you're going to be in danger versus, no, I'm going to do what's right, knowing that I'm going to be in danger versus, like, it's just a lose-lose situation.
So, and I think that from a story standpoint, when you don't show those things, the conversation can happen, but it really is easy to ignore in the animated show that, oh, this is a full-fledged genocide.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it's a tough thing to grapple with. So the change in the story is, it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
But I also, sometimes it goes, oh, well, I'm not doing that, so I'm not that bad. Right. That's like, that's Like, that's where a lot of times when shows and movies and books over give so much of this, like, caricature version of what oppression looks like,
mm-hmm.
it makes it really easy for people to go, well, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So, like...
So, it's so, totally okay.
So, I'm not participating, and that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Yeah. You're still bad if you're not burning people alive and you're committing...
And you're, like, allowing for other
and
people.
And you're allowing that to happen. Yeah. Woof.
So, anything else before we take a little break?
No, I think genocide's a good note to end on.
And we'll be right back.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us. We have a couple more segments for you today. We are going to first talk about Twi and La.
Yeah.
Things that pulled us in.
Yeah.
And things that pushed us away.
No.
And this is really the only kind of segment that we really lean into around, like, talking about things that are outside of the script. So thinking about, like, the music in this really was, like, badass, mm-hmm. or the, you know, this the way they did the lighting in this scene was, and so we get to talk about things that we don't normally talk about here, and we get to talk about things that we do normally talk about here. So we get to kind of pick what pulls us in and pushes us away. Sunshine,
yeah.
Give me some of either.
One of the things that pulls me in is I think that in any adaptation, the idea of show me things that were not shown before
mm-hmm.
is a really good opportunity. And so getting to spend time with the Fire Nation in the Earth Kingdom before before Aang's disappearance, getting to spend time with the Air Nomads as they're prepping for the, like that's a way to expand lore in a way that I think is like,
and it
oh,
also
cool,
makes
give me something
sense,
I haven't seen before,
right? It makes sense, the idea of like we're gonna shift the forces away from this perspective so that we can accomplish this mass, because that was a big question mark, like how could you take out an entire nation with all of these things, and by showing us how they diverted resources and how they planned this out, it just makes a little bit more sense. And so the expansion there I thought was really cool.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I really enjoyed about it.
In the same way, I really liked the idea of like a comet festival. I think it's so true that all of these like nations, especially the Air Nations, would celebrate this comet coming
because
through.
It's a balance
exactly
of the, like the world, so like, you know, it the lunar eclipse
sense.
Coming on later on,
yes.
All these things,
all of those moments being something that the nations would celebrate is a really cool thing that I'm like, man, what a missed opportunity that we like, that seems like a really cool thing to include.
It also kind of makes the betrayal a little bit worse.
Yeah,
right? We were celebrating
exactly
what
yeah.
gives you strength.
Yeah.
And you decided to use that moment to
yeah.
wipe us out. Almost makes it feel a lot worse.
Yeah. It's wild. Just in general, like kind of speaking to what you were talking about before, just that whole introduction scene I thought was a really great way to lure people in. I thought that was really neat. I thought that was well done. I was hooked from them. I was like, when is this? What's going on? And then I was like, once I figured, I was like, oh, that's super cool. So I thought that was just a really good hook.
I think it's a smart move to kind of do your Zack Snyder slow-mo moments in their battle sequences because it shows you you can see the full depth of the intricacies of the movement that is required to get that thing done.
Mm-hmm.
And when you slow it down, it makes it have more sense in combat, right? So similar to like D&D, where like an entire turn is 6 seconds.
Yeah.
So like you can see all these things happening, but when you put them in the context of like the actual battle, it's very quick.
Yeah.
Which makes sense versus previous adaptations that maybe tried to show you all those things in real time,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd get this like slow moving boulder in live action
yeah.
like come across, and they're like, ah, that doesn't feel as good. So I think there's an opportunity there. One of the things that I don't love is I'm it's all feels very green screen to me right now.
Yeah, bending for me is on the list for things that kind of push me away.
And so, like, everything kind of feels green screen, from the environments to the bending to the animals.
Mm-hmm.
To me, so it's just like, is it? It's really still kind of animated, which is fun, but like, I think it's fine, right? Like, and that's my argument with like live action Lion King, where it's like there's literally no live action in the live action. It's just a different form of animation.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, an episode in, I've yet to be convinced that like this, you're doing something that is different enough that it is needed to go live action. And I just don't know if I'm convinced of that just yet. It doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean that people can't enjoy it. But I'm still in a point where I'm like, why was it needed?
Yeah.
Like, and that's where I'm kind of just like, I'm excited to watch the rest of them to see if that I can be convinced of that.
And I think one of the things, like, mine's just a hair off from that in terms of why I'm thinking about bending as something that kind of pushed me away. It was more about like, there are some of the things where they just don't make as much sense to me in the choices they made. Like, they seem to have made airbending quite overpowered in terms of like, you know, Aang gliding down from the top of that building, and like, so much of Twitter blew up around, you know,
he's Aang flying.
Can fly? Yeah. Oh my god. And I don't think that they're saying that he can fly, but
He glides really well.
Yeah, exactly. So and that's not the only thing. I think like Zuko being able to launch a fire missile like that far. I think the distance that they can bend is something that is a little fuzzy for me.
In the original, Aang hopping on Appa and then using his glider to slam the meteor like into the ice wall.
Well, and they were using a trebuchet, not bending.
Correct.
Right? And so...
And that made sense. But then Katara, to block this one, Katara did like a...
Pulled water 50, from... Yeah, like a exactly. 50 foot. 100 feet. They were high.
Which, and that's the type of stuff where it's like, it's nitpicky and I'm not like... And that's just not ruining the show. I'm not sitting there being like, oh,
yeah,
how dare you watch this and enjoy this. But it important. Is just kind of like, eh.
That was exactly... Sure. I watched, I was like, But like, so it just pulled... I think what it did is it pulled me out for a second. It pulled me out of it.
Yeah, and I, you know, sometimes the argument is, where's, you know, we're watching a fantasy world, so typically it's like, how much disbelief am I I need to kind of garner? Superman getting hit with a bullet in the eye, and you're like, come on! It's like, well, the rules built around Superman would dictate that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do that. Unless it's a kryptonite bullet.
The rule built around Katara is that she can barely lift a water sphere 30 minutes ago, which doesn't mean that she couldn't do that, but
I mean,
like,
she adapts really fast.
And part of that is, have we seen other benders move that much water before? And at the time it's no.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. But one more thing that I really liked was Gran Gran having the nod to the original with the intro scene. I thought that was just a really great way to hand that off.
I
thought it made a lot of sense.
Yep.
And then one more thing I didn't like.
Yeah.
The Air Council, they clearly made an effort to have people of different genders in the room, but it was only male presenting folks that spoke in the council, which is true to the original also, but I'm like,
if you're gonna adapt, make it better.
Do a better adaptation, right? And so, like, I wanted some non-male representation in that conversation for the leadership.
Some people thought that was Yang Chen, which is I was like, no, that's not Yang Chen.
That's not how that works.
No, like, but
yes,
I think some
we
people
did see
like,
Kyoshi, but like,
yeah. I was like, well, maybe that's just the hairstyle of choice.
Turns out, that's how they do that. But yeah, those are some of the things that I noticed both ways.
Yeah, overall, one episode in.
Yeah.
Is it better than the movie? Yeah.
Yes.
Is it as good as the show? No. Not to me.
Yeah.
But we'll see. You've got 7 more episodes to reel me in and
well, and I'm going to watch it. Like, I'm absolutely going to keep watching, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even with the next couple of seasons, because they already got approved.
Because we got episodes to record.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not the only reason. I'm actually genuinely interested. Anyway, that has been Twee and La, a chance for us to kind of talk about some things that we don't normally talk about. And now we're going to go into a little bit more of an intentional conversation around our little devotion. That's right. So we're talking about an element today, and we're fusing that with our lens. And the water element that we're talking about is water.
And the water element we're talking about is water.
It would make sense, right? Yeah, so we're talking about water today, and we are using that as a way to kind of balance ourselves and make sure we're talking about all of the elements. And so we're talking about water today and adaptation.
Yeah.
And we're setting an intention with those two things in mind. So what's an intention that you want to set for this week with those two things in mind?
There's a really interesting story.
There is an interesting
allegory,
story.
Parable. Whatever. It exists.
Axiom.
And it's the idea that, you know, when you put an egg in water and you heat it up, it changes the egg.
Yeah.
You boil the water,
it goes from this soft to really hard-boiled egg, right?
Right. Which you could say is maybe Zuko.
Ooh, interesting. Right? When water add stress.
When you boil carrots.
They are hard.
They are hard and then get... Really soft and mushy. And I don't know if I have a character for that.
Who gets mushy?
I don't know.
Iroh become mushy?
Maybe a little bit.
By name only.
Then the idea that if you put boiling water and mix it with, you know, coffee grounds, the water changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concept is kind of about, like, do you let the environment change you, or do you change the environment that you're in? And I'm not saying that it's a perfect analogy, because I don't think that exists a lot of the times, but I do like the idea of what is something I can do to better my environment this week by making a change in my life that I was unwilling to change. Whether that's just the way that I'm engaging with spaces around me, what am I going to do differently this upcoming week to change my behavior to better the environment? And that's what I want to focus on. What's the adaptation I'm going to make?
Just make the water a little bit sweeter.
Or more bitter.
Or more bitter and brown.
Coffee. But I like black coffee.
You sure
do.
So
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I think that's great. I think that there's a lot of us, if we just focused on changing our little corner of the world, then all of the world's corners would be changed.
Yeah.
For me, one of the things that came up was I started thinking about water, and that led me to think about rivers. And I was thinking about the lifespan of a river is really interesting, where if you have a river that's really young, it's usually straight. And over time, it starts to have long ebbs and flows and winds from, you know, lots of these angles and becomes really, really, you know, windy. And I think over time, it just begins to erode and shift the earth. And the earth is kind of adapting to the running water and becoming a very different experience and environment. And I think what I want to realize is that I am moving through life and things are changing around me, and the things that are happening within me are creating, you know, stress points that are shifting the earth slowly. And sometimes it floods and it's going to make me more stressed and it's going to erode that place more quickly. And I think what I want to become more attentive of is, how do I notice where those points are so that I can notice them sooner and care for them? And if I don't want that to change, maybe I set some boundaries and, you know, build a little way to prevent that erosion from happening so that I can keep the path that I want this to go down more effective and more direct. And so I just want to be attentive to those big shifts that are coming in my life. And I'm about to graduate. I'm about to have a a salary and a job, theoretically.
Hey, we love that for you.
Yeah. And so I know that there's going to be a lot of shifts and changes. And I really want to be attentive to, as those things happen, where are the points that I want to pay attention to that I can really bolster to stay sane? In other words, that's my thought process right now. How's that?
I love that. Love that.
Oh.
All right.
Great.
A little gratitude, because as some of our listeners may know, that we like to end our episode with a little gratitude for a specific character of our choosing.
That's right.
Who are you thankful for?
You know, in this adaptation, I found myself not only chuckling often, but really loving the interactions between Sokka and Katara and Sokka and other people, generally speaking. I found the one-liners to be funny. I found the delivery and dry sarcasm to be my type of humor. Not necessarily everybody's type of humor, but I laughed. But what I really appreciate about Sokka in this episode is just his willingness to adapt and his willingness to change. And the fact that he cares so deeply for Katara, that he listens to her, is really beautiful. I also think, like, we didn't talk about this in Tui and Law, and I kind of just want to lift it up, that the amount of people who were like, oh my God, Netflix is changing how misogynistic Sokka is. I'm like, he's still kind of patronizing and misogynistic in this. But I found that his will, like, we still see growth and change from him. And so I thought it was well done. I appreciated Sokka. And so I'm grateful for it.
Love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Gran.
Big fan.
Yeah. And I think part of that is when people can model things well, I think really can have an immeasurable impact, that a lot of times it's what we do, not what we say, that helps the world become a better place. And so, though what we say also, words matter.
We do say that. Words matter.
But for her to show change, for her to be in a place where she's able to share knowledge and give input and help walk alongside others during change, I think is really nice.
Yeah.
And so I just I'm giving my gratitude to her.
Water, earth, fire, air.
That's been our first episode. Back
We're
in
back.
The saddle again, at least for 7 more episodes.
That's right. We got this.
Anything you want to say before we sign off?
Until next time.
All right.
Be well and do good.
I'm Sunshine.
And I'm Ben.
And this has been Bending, Not Breaking. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.